Now discovered a way to actually move the presenters off faster by leaning on the keyboard will really do it. Okay, so our next presenter is Aaron Katz, who is a senior lecturer in the Department of Health Services, University of Washington School of Public Health and Community Medicine. He's currently the director of the Packard Gates Population Leadership Program and formerly the director of the University of Washington's Health Policy Analysis Program from 1988 through 2003. He has also received APHA's Award for Excellence in November 2006 and the University of Washington's School of Public Health Outstanding Teaching Award in 2004. So please welcome Aaron Katz.
Thank you and good morning. This is one of these times when you say, I never expected to be on a panel on emergency preparedness. This is definitely not where my career track was going. But I have to say that it's really interesting, and especially interesting to hear these other presentations and that there's actually some building of knowledge with each of the work that's being presented here. So that's kind of exciting. I have lots of conflicts, but no conflicts of interest in relation to this presentation. I'll talk about the study in a second, but I just wanted to recognize my collaborators at the Center for Studying Health System Change, which is a policy think tank in Washington, D.C. You can see our research brief on the study that I'll be talking about here at the website hschange.org. So we used this definition of surge capacity in our preliminary work, literature review, and talking with folks. And you, looks like there's a number of folks in here who know this area a lot better than I do. There's a lot of definitions and a lot of understandings of surge capacity, but this is the one that we use to guide the qualitative research that we did. In the literature, what we found is that surge capacity was generally organized into four main components: management structure and communications, equipment and supplies, facilities, and personnel. And these components were the major categories in the questionnaires that we put together for the interviews in the various sites that we looked at, and I'll show you those in a second. So the community tracking study, which is the larger longitudinal study of healthcare market change that the Center for Studying Health System Change has been involved in, and I've been involved, been affiliated as a researcher with the center since 1995. We have been focusing, like a lot of folks, on emergency preparedness and public health preparedness since 2001 in particular. So we have a number of studies that look at this arena, and generally speaking, we found that there were improvements in community-wide collaborations and communications starting in 2002 and 2003 in particular when we were talking to various folks in the know in sites around the country. And what was particularly interesting to us was the challenge of and the progress in public health working across sectors. We often got, in that period of time, 2002, roughly speaking, comments like, we've never sat with folks from the police department. We've never sat with folks from the fire department. We have stronger relationships now with the medical community and the hospital community than we've ever had. So that was a significant finding then. We did find also that, generally speaking, people's understanding of surge capacity up until 2005 was that really there was inadequate capacity. We often got comments like, surge for what? You know, what are we supposed to be preparing to surge for? I mean, is it smallpox? Is it an earthquake? Is it the new plant blowing up down the block? There was just this view of this is too big and we just don't have the capacity to scale up. So those were the kinds of comments we were getting back then. There were resource constraints, challenges of working across sectors, particularly the cultural challenges between public health and how it responded to emergencies and law enforcement and how it responded. From everything from collecting information or interrogations to what do we do with that information? Do we hold it close or do we disseminate it as widely as possible? And we had lots of comments then about the fact that there were multiple federal guidelines and it was difficult to know which ones to follow. This has been talked about already by the previous speakers, and a number of you already know this. There are a number of federal agencies and national organizations like the Joint Commission involved in this work. So the community tracking study has been looking at healthcare market change in 12 markets. Those are the ones with the boxes that are horizontal. So those have been, and basically the study is site visits every 2 years. We do interviews with between 75 and 100 people in each site, from community activists to political leaders and the heads of health plans and medical organizations and hospitals and the like. The horizontal sites in red, I guess that is, are the 6 sites out of the 12 that we selected for this specific focus on surge capacity. The community tracking study itself is funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and they also funded this focus on surge capacity. We interviewed people in those 6 sites, primarily focused on state and local emergency management folks, emergency preparedness coordinators of one type or another at local hospitals, as well as at state and local health departments. And we also interviewed people in 3 cities, New York, Washington, D.C., and New Orleans, who, as we all know, have had recent experience with large-scale disasters. These interviews were done in late 2007 and early 2008. So what did we find? Well, no big surprise, funding drives surge capacity activities. The fact is that federal money is the money that's used to build surge capacity. There's very little state or local money available for this in any of the sites that we looked at. And the money is fragmented. I think there's a general sense that it's gotten better, that federal agencies are better coordinated. But still, there's a sense that there's a lot of fragmentation, different requirements, that make it hard at the local level to do comprehensive planning. So, and that federal priorities don't necessarily match local priorities. So, initiatives like a focus on pan flu or smallpox don't necessarily match what local leaders would want to put resources in. Ongoing planning and coordination are key. These are areas that we have seen a lot of progress in. That's been important. For example, the hospital folks in New Orleans talked about how important it was that they had been talking to police before Katrina so that the police were prepared to come and provide security in the hospitals during that emergency. Stockpiling supplies, as we just heard, this is really challenging on a lot of levels. It's challenging just to bear the costs of stockpiling, challenging to find space to stockpile. What do you do about replacing supplies that whose expiration dates have come up? Who's going to pay for that? That's not clear. And there was a particular concern about buying equipment that was only going to be used in some theoretical event in the future and isn't used every day. So we buy some kind of equipment, we train staff on that equipment, and then what happens in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years when nobody's used that equipment? So a lot of concern that we need to be buying equipment that has some level of everyday use. Identifying surge space requires creativity, not just which halls are we going to put cots in, or can we evacuate the medical clinic across from the hospital, but working with community colleges to use space in community colleges for domiciles during emergencies, as well as, for example, in Phoenix, one hospital had used its telemedicine network to train outlying hospitals on burn care so that in the case of an emergency that involved a lot of burn patients, patients could be placed in these other hospitals and cared for with the support of the central hospital in Phoenix. So a lot of creativity going on there. Stretching staff is definitely a stress, a stretch. We got lots of interesting comments when we asked questions about, well, you know, where are you going to get extra staff in case of a large-scale emergency? I mean, you could hear the sort of underlying chuckle when we asked that question. Right, there's going to be additional staff, like from where? Question, you know, the biggest issue is, well, how long is it going to take for those additional staff to get to my facility? And yeah, we got some additional staff during Katrina. We heard this in New Orleans. They were what the folks there called emergency tourists, and they needed a lot of supervision. So they came in just for a short period of time. They wanted some emergency response experience, but they needed a lot of supervision, and that wasn't necessarily seen as a plus. And the other response was, look, you know, most of these disasters are going to affect the whole market, so it's not like we're going to be able to borrow staff from another hospital, even though in many markets there have been lots of agreements developed, inter-facility agreements to share staff. The reality is that most of the facilities were going to be affected by any of these disasters. So the fact was that the folks within the markets felt like they were going to have to go it alone for a number of days, and what they were focusing on was resiliency. So this notion of, I think both of our previous speakers talked about, caring for the staff that were going to be there, caring for their families, their pets, their kids, making sure that those family members were safe so that the staff felt like they could come in during these disasters. And then communities really had to find ways to overcome the syndrome of sort of the hospital was the first place to go. Community members were, you know, rightly anxious during emergencies, and you know, the default place is go to the hospital emergency room, and there was a real need to find ways of diverting of before a disaster hits, getting the word out to make sure that people had a sense that there were other places, other things that they can do, including staying at home with pre-planned emergency supplies. So the implications. Continued funding is critical. It's our view, as based on this study, it's really unlikely that we're going to be able to sustain the level of the progress that communities have made in preparing for emergencies if funding isn't continued. And that's a problem given the, you know, whatever we want to call it, malaise, recession, depression that we're in or about to be in. And also there's a concern that there's sort of fatigue at the policy level. You know, we've been dealing with emergency preparedness and, you know, hurricanes and fear about terrorism for a long time, and we just want to get on to the next big problem. There's fatigue in the community, worried that community members are no longer paying attention, and of course in the media. You know, I mean, the media is fickle. We don't see the Iraq war on the front page anymore. Our attention span is short, so that's a concern. Surge capacity requires broad-based support, and sort of connected with the short attention span, there's concern that that attention will attenuate, and the support for building and keeping surge capacity will likewise erode. Big question that we have is surge capacity compatible with the kind of competition we see in healthcare marketplaces today? The fact is that the marketplace is not conducive to healthcare organizations maintaining excess space, staff, supplies, or much of anything. So, our concern is that if this is if competition continues to be the road that we go on in general in our healthcare system, that we may not be able to maintain any kind of surge capacity to face public health emergencies in the future. And finally, So we all know workforce is a challenge on a daily basis, and identifying, training, maintaining a workforce that can be available in the event of emergency seems like a daunting challenge everywhere that we were. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, and it seems appropriate to employ a baseball metaphor.